Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the only guy who I will read his column without even, like, you know, before even seeing what it's all about is Mike Vaccaro. That is nobody else.
High praise there, Mike. Yeah, I like that.
Out of the New York Post. So he's the one. Hi, Mike.
I mean, it can't get any better than that, right?
Well, it could get a lot better. But I'm just, I'm waiting for the day that you write the column, and I'll probably be dead when you do this. You probably have to put it, like, on top of my gravestone, that you write about the Jets winning the Super Bowl.
So if there's one wish for myself and for you, it's that, you know, I hope you're in a luxury mansion in Florida by this point, but I hope, right, I get to write that column for you at some point.
I hope so, Mike. I really do. I hope so.
Do you think and or want to explore any possibility of Noah Syndergaard being moved in a substantial trade over the next couple of weeks?
I mean, you know, to me, I mean, when I first heard that, the first name that I thought of was, sure, if you want to bring back Nolan Arenado, that's the kind of guy you're talking about. I know it kind of sounds like Jeff Wilpon talking about wanting a lopsided deal, but I don't think that's really all about lopsided, frankly. But, I mean, that's the kind of deal you're talking about. To me, that's the kind of deal that would excite me enough to say, well, okay, if we're bringing back Nolan Arenado, you know, aside to an extension, then, yeah, I'll be willing to deal with that. I think that right now, you know, to me, I mean, if the message the Mets are sending out is that they want to compete this year, what better way to compete this year than to hopefully get 96 starts out of, you know, DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Wheeler, and, you know, who knows what you're going to get out of Mass and whoever, but that's a pretty good place to start if you want to compete this year, you know, and I get it. I mean, sometimes to make a deal, it's got to hurt. But frankly, I mean, I know JT Realmuto is a really good player, but I'm not sure exactly when he became, you know, Manny Sanguin or Johnny Bench or, you know, Bill Freehan or any of the dominant catchers that we remember growing up, Gary Carter for that matter, Mike Piazza. I think he's a very good player, but I mean, if it's going to cost you Noah Syndergaard, I almost think it's counterproductive.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with that more. What do you think, Mike? What do you see the Mets doing next? Let's assume the Syndergaard is not going anywhere. What next move do you see the Mets making?
Well, I do think they have to sign a catcher, but that's the thing. There are catchers to sign. And to me, I mean, you know, it looks like the Mets are about sending messages to their fans all the time, even now. And I get it. You know, Brody's tried to kind of make it a whole different thing, that they're not going to be moved by the wind and by the whims of the fans. I get that. But I do think that they're about sending messages to people saying, this is what we're about now. And if what they're about now is being a varsity baseball team, then you sign a catcher for money, and you actually don't worry about how much money that costs. And I know this goes through, this is a circular conversation we've had for years, and we'll probably continue to have as long as, you know, the Wolfhounds on the team. But I think nothing would send an immediate message that, look, this really is not just business as usual. If you go out and you actually identify who the catcher is you want, and you sign him, and you move on, and then you do the same thing in terms of shoring up your bullpen. You know, because to me, I think the smartest thing that Brody has said all along is that you don't want to, you know, fill one hole and create another one. And I think that, you know, any reasonable trade scenario that's going to bring you back a significant piece is going to open up another hole. And look, I don't think any of us is ready to crown Rosario, the next A-Rod or anything. But I do think he's an intriguing player that you wouldn't mind seeing develop another year or two with the Mets to see what you have. And he's a guy that you hear a lot, or Nimmo's a guy you hear a lot, and Conforto's a guy you really hear a lot. And I get it, Conforto is a guy who can be frustrating, but I really do believe that he's playing for a big year this year, because I think he really did have the injury problem last year, and I think that he's a guy that you build a team around, not somebody that you wind up, you know, having to plug a hole once he's gone.
Here's what Brody's done brilliantly. He has changed the subject away from the fact that the Mets don't spend nearly enough money. Because the facts are the facts. The Mets have not been a top 10 payroll team since 2011. And in 2011, their payroll was very similar to what it was now. So the big difference is other teams are consistently spending more than the Mets are. And the Mets have shown nothing that they're going to raise the payroll. I mean, the Robbie Cano Edwin Diaz was financially neutral. Jeff Wilpon even admitted that. So, you know, you touched on spending money. Joe and I have been screaming about Bryce or Manny Machado. God. The facts are the facts. They are still not a top 10 spending team, and that includes the fact they're not even paying a portion of David Wright and Yoenis Cespedes' contract. So they're doing it differently in that Brody is speaking differently than Sandy Alderson, and he's certainly more aggressive. But financially, what's changed? It's the same thing.
Yeah, which is why I do think that, you know, in terms of it would almost be more beneficial for them to actually go sign a Grindahl. And it would be to figure out a deal that works for Real Muto, because not only fills a need, but it also, I think, would probably satisfy some folks who, you know, look, that's not necessarily saying that the worm is completely turned, because, you know, no one's going to confuse Grindahl with Machado or Harper. And if they don't get involved in those sweepstakes, there's going to be an element of people who are wondering, well, if you're the New York Mets, why bother if you're not going to go after players like that? And I get that. That's fair. But I do think that that's why it seems to make sense, especially because catchers is a screening need, and there are fits out there, which will only cost you, you know, money, and, you know, in Grindahl's case, a draft pick. But it does seem like Brody is very into sending messages and kind of planting flags and trying to say this is what we're about now. But, you know, as long as he works for the Mets, he has to understand that there is going to be an underlying cynicism about what the Mets are willing to pay to create the winner, the immediate winner that he talks about.
What about center field? Do you see them signing A.J. Pollock, Mike?
I think that would be another, you know, interesting move along what Brody wants to do. I do think, look, I mean, and the thing of it is, if you do sign him, and obviously it's a lot less painful if you have to include someone like Nimmo in a trade for bullpen help or something like that. And I think it would be understandable. I mean, obviously the Pollock thing comes with the worry about injury, but all I know is that whenever he's been healthy and I've watched him play against the Mets, he seems to go 6-for-6 every game. So from that limited sample size, he's certainly a player that you want. And kidding aside, he's a good player. He's a local player. He's a guy that I think Mets fans can get really excited about. And I think it would be, you know, again, another kind of statement transaction that would tell you, you know, what kind of team he wants to build and what kind of franchise he wants to build.
Talking to Mike Vaccaro of the Post, so far the Yankee offseason has been very, is the way I would say it. They brought back CeCe. They brought back Gardner. They may bring back Jay Happ. Rosenthal's reporting they're close. They do make the trade for James Paxton. I think most Yankee fans are still hoping that Cashman out of nowhere signs Bryce Harper or signs Manny Machado. Is this different, or do you think it will be the same Yankee team where, kind of like Teixeira, when you least expect it, Cashman jumps in and makes that big move?
Yeah, I mean, here's two things. I don't really think that Cashman really believes that if Judge had been healthy all year, I think he thinks things might have turned out differently. And that really is where you get the where the AL East was kind of lost for the Yankees, and they were right there. They did win 100 games last year. It's easy to forget that because it's maddening for New York to watch the Red Sox celebrate and take victory lap after victory lap. The fact is, I mean, you know, when you win 100 games, you're not that far away. I'm not going to say they're necessarily on a par with them the way that Randy Levine does, but I do think that, you know, you want to be careful about altering too much of the makeup of the team. And Harper, the thing with Harper is that it just makes so much sense because, you know, his swing and the stadium, and, you know, it just seems like it'll be the perfect fit. I mean, I will never, when it's the Yankees, you know, not think they're lying in the weeds for everybody. But, he's certainly made it perfectly clear that you know, without actually coming out and saying we're not going to cite Bryce Harper, that it seems like he's a low priority. So, here's what I find interesting, and when you think about it, you know, if the Yankees weren't the Yankees, and if we didn't know what the Yankees were and who they're owned by and who they're run by, there would be a lot of Met-like grumbling, I think, so far this offseason about half measures and, well, why do you want to go this far?
Oh, I think it's already happening.
Why are you acting that way? But, you know, the fact is you're the Yankees, and they've earned the benefit of the doubt. And so, and as a result, we've seen them lie in the weeds before in the past, and I certainly think they have one oh-wow move in them before yeah. Things reconvene in Tampa.
I don't think the grumbling will ever be as loud as Met fans for obvious reasons, but I think I've already sensed a little bit of grumbling. But let me ask you this, because it was a year ago right around this time that the Yankees swooped in and got Giancarlo Stanton, and they gave up very little. They just absorbed that contract. And Stanton had a good year, is the way I would define it. Not good enough, sure. I get it, but he had a good year. If they don't go after Bryce because they took on Giancarlo, do you think it was a mistake to take on Giancarlo a year ago?
If that's the reason why they're not going after Bryce, it was a huge mistake, because I think Bryce is a better fit, certainly for the long term we're talking about here in terms of these contracts, than Stanton. I understand why they did the Stanton thing, but if it winds, I mean, well, how about if it just winds up as a combination of the fact that Stanton, that you signed Stanton for this long, and but Gardner's now still on the team, you know, is just even if it's a small factor. I mean, those are kind of things that are hard to explain, because I really do think, look, I think that Bryce has his warts, and I think that we've, you know, because if you watch the Mets a lot, you've seen the Nationals a lot, and so you've seen both the highs and the lows of Bryce Harper. But, I mean, there isn't a scenario in my brain where I don't think of him as being an ideal fit for the Yankees, for Yankee Stadium, for that lineup, for everything. Yes, if it turns out in the long run, we write the history of this year of the Yankees, that they were unable to go after Bryce because they decided to go after Stanton, and I think that was a terrible decision.
Talking to the great Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post. All right, Mike, we're going to switch gears to the football teams. We'll start, of course, with the Jets. The coaching situation, is there any – I got to tell you this, because you know me. How could I not think this way? I am so scared that they win a couple more games and they're going to keep this guy as head coach. I got to tell you. I mean, he should have been gone long ago. He should have been gone 2 years ago. He should have certainly been gone after the Buffalo game, certainly after the Tennessee disgrace. The guy should have been out. I am concerned about that. Your thoughts, and who do you think is going to be the next coach of this team, and is McCagnan going to be here?
I understand that thinking, Joe, because to me, if there was absolutely 100% no chance that that he was coming back and that the Mets made up, then I think he would have been fired already, the way that Mike McCarthy was fired. Personally, I'm with you. I think McCarthy, if McCarthy has any interest, you have to pursue that interest.
No question. No brainer.
That's the guy, because, I mean, you know, he's got a track record. And look, I think Jets fans are a little over the notion that you're going to find the magic bullet assistant coach who's going to become Bill Belichick, because they've tried that now five or six times in a row. And you know what? The last sure thing they hired was Bill Parcells. There's a reason why he was a sure thing, because he had a track record. You know, when the Giants hired Tom Coughlin, he had a track record. I mean, you know, when we go back to, I guess, maybe thinking of ourselves in New York as having different standards, and the fact is that New York should be a place that attracts a Pat Riley, that attracts, it shouldn't always be an entry-level job. It's like this has become an entry-level job city for some reason, and a lot of these, you know, the Knicks with the Yankees, the Mets, I mean, why is it that way? Why can't we?
Is he there, Mike? We lose him?
I think we may have lost Mike.
He's back. Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
Right, I guess he's not. And Mike Vaccaro is back with us.
What's going on here in Riverville, Mike? I mean, God.
I'm the only guy in the world who, you know, goes to the landline. The landline goes dead. Go figure.
Yeah. What can I tell you, bro? Anyway, continue on about what the Jet, the disaster that they are.
Yeah, I mean, what I was saying about it, you know, New York's a city that's why can't we have a coach like Pat Riley again, or a coach like Bill Parcells again, a guy who comes here with a track record? And I think that's what the Jets really cry out for. I think the time of trying to find the magic bullet assistant is really over. I mean, they've tried that five or six times in a row. It hasn't worked. Why not Mike McCarthy?
Hey, you know me. He would have been here already. If I ran his team, forget about it. He would have been a coach already.
If you ran this team, people would talk about you being Brody Van Wagenen on, like, times 100.
Yeah.
But that would be cool.
Brody on crack or something.
Oh, my God. It would be unbelievable what I'd be doing. Yeah, you know that.
I'm intrigued by the Steeler collapse, because even though the Steelers don't change head coaches, they never do it, could a guy like Mike Tomlin be available? There are already rumblings about John Harbaugh being available, and those guys of that ilk, Super Bowl winning coaches, all three of them, Tomlin, Harbaugh, John Harbaugh, and McCarthy. I mean, I completely agree with you. Enough of the first-time head coach who is a defensive coordinator making them the head coach, hoping he's going to be the next Belichick. Enough of it already.
Yeah, and look, and I get it. You know, when the Giants hired Bill Parcells, he'd only been a coordinator, and it worked out. Worked out really well. Sometimes it does, but other times it's not a terrible idea to actually go to somebody that you know has an idea of what they're doing. And I think especially, look, I mean, it really is a hypercritical time in the Jets' history, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
I mean, I mean, look, I mean, I think all of us, it would kind of tempered our expectations about what maybe Darnold is or could be. All of a sudden, that came roaring back with those two throws on Sunday. And with good reason. That's the fun part. We can all joke about tanking and, you know, well, it's better to lose than to win. But the fact is, I think deep down, even Jets fans who will tell you they wanted to lose every game had to have felt great watching, you know, those two balls that Darnold threw. That's what you had in mind. That's what you're hoping to do. And that's what you need. You need, whoever you hire has to be a guy whose specific job is to maximize the next 10 or 12 years of what you have with Sam Darnold if you really believe that he's a special quarterback. And I think a lot of people are still bought in that he is that kind of special quarterback.
But they can't. But I am so scared, Mike, that this regime is going to, you know, that you can't be fooling yourself thinking this guy, if they won a couple more games, okay, let's give him another year. And the fact that the team loves him so much, even more so, because they love him so much, but, you know, they didn't love him so much in that Buffalo game or when they were losing six games in a row where they choked against Tennessee. I mean, where was the love? You know what I mean?
I'm not saying I believe in sports mutinies, but I do think that the people around, you know, around the Jets understand that that would not be received very well. You know, the announcement is not only would he be coming back, but he'd almost certainly be coming back with the extension.
Of course, because next year's his last year of his deal.
And exactly, and that would be hard to sell. I mean, and I'm not saying that should be the only reason why you do things in sports, but I do think you have to. I mean, look, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I mean, if you're Bernie Van Wagenen, you better be damn sure that this is going to be end in a World Series for you if you trade Noah Syndergaard to the Yankees.
Right.
These are the kind of Faustian bargains you make in sports. The fact is, whether it's right or wrong, logical or not logical, right? I mean, what's the best thing you want from the trade? You want both teams to do well. Well, the Mets could do very well in this trade, win 92 games, lose in the National League Division Series. And meanwhile, the Yankees are going to win the World Series because they have Noah Syndergaard. It's going to be hard to live the rest of his career in New York as a GM if you know that you're the guy who gave the Yankees the final piece. Similarly, if you're the guys who run the Jets, it's going to be hard to liberate yourselves if you absolutely throw away the next couple of years because of a coach. And look, I don't think anybody's being unfair if they think that Todd Bowles has failed here in the job. He clearly has failed the job. And whether you like him or not, that's a whole different story. And whether the players like him or not is an entirely different story. But I think you really do need to understand that you exist because people care about you. And I think that there are certain seminal moments that would really test that. And I think Noah Syndergaard as a Yankee is one, and Todd Bowles as the Jet coach in 2019 is another.
Let me ask you this. How long would you play nice with Kevin Durant before you ripped him and then he cried about it and forced you to change the headline? Would you give it a month? Would you give it 2 months? How long would that take?
He is definitely a diva. There's no question about that. It does make you wonder, you know, how his stick would play here. But I will say this also. I mean, you know, if you come here and you play well, I don't think there's going to be a lot of drama. I think the problem when you have a team like the Warriors with all those personalities and all that success already in the bank is that this is what happens as a result. I mean, I think that's what we saw years ago with the Yankees, you know, the Bronx New Vintage, and even the Mets when you had, you know, them kind of, you know, fighting for the back page every day. I think that's kind of an ancillary thing. But you know what? I wouldn't mind having to answer that question in principle as opposed to theory. That wouldn't be a bad thing. That would certainly make both of our jobs a lot easier.
You know what, though? Think about this. All right, so the Knicks won 54 games not that long ago, obviously, the 2013 mm-hmm. season. And it didn't take long for it to turn from, that's great, they won 54 games, you got to win a freaking NBA title, and the turn on Melo occurred quickly. I think it's the same thing. There'd be a lot of excitement that the Knicks are relevant. There'd be tons of excitement that they're a playoff team. But then it's going to come down to what it came down to with Melo. You got to win the whole thing. If you don't, what are you in this town?
Look, now it's 20 years later, and everybody cries when they talk about Patrick Ewing. People literally get misty-eyed talking about Patrick Ewing. And these are the same guys I talked to 20 years ago who couldn't wait for him to retire.
right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why, because he didn't win the championship. Now, the narrative is always going to be different around Willis Reed, always going to be different around Clyde Frazier. Why? Because they won their championship. And that's just, you know, I mean, for better or worse, that's just the way it is. You know, I mean, there are very few guys who get to go through a career and not win a championship and have their narrative unscathed. I mean, we saw one just end with David Wright. I think people feel regret for David Wright, but they don't feel the kind of, you know, resentment, I think, that, at all, that his tenure never won, resulted in a championship, the way that people feel about Patrick Ewing or would feel about Kevin Durant or do feel probably right now about Carmelo Anthony.
Hmm. How about Eli? Is he the giant quarterback next year?
I mean, it looks like the momentum is certainly gathering steam that way. I mean, you know, it's certainly what seems to be what his coach wants and what his general manager wants. And, I mean, look, he's had his moments this year. I still think it's a mistake. I mean, I still look at him and I see him as being the piece that's going to hold this team back. And look, I mean, whenever you look at Saquon Barkley now, it's impossible not to think of Barry Sanders, right? I mean, Barry Sanders was impossible to keep your eyes off of for 10 years. And what are they playing, 3 playoff games? I mean, is that what the Giants really want? And I think that, look, right now, who knows? I mean, you never know, you know, who they're able to look into in a draft sometime. You never know who they're going to be able to acquire to actually be Eli's successor. But I don't think that when Saquon Barkley plays in the playoff game, the guy who handles the ball is going to be Eli Manning. I mean, what happens this year? But
hey, it ain't over yet, Mike.
They need 7 things to happen, Mike. 7.
Ain't over till it's over, right? 21. They see crazier things.
Yeah,
it would be pretty crazy.
Right now, before I let you go quickly, the Super Bowl is who? Who's in the Super Bowl right now? Your thoughts?
You know what? I said Chiefs early in the year. I know it's a little dicey now. I'm going to stick with the Chiefs, mostly because I want them to be there.
Okay.
Mostly because I want to write about them 7 days because I think they're the most fun team. And, you know, why not? Let's say the Saints. I think the Chiefs-Saints would be just one of the most enjoyable Super Bowls, both in terms of lead-up and in terms of the game itself. And I think that what we just did now is probably guaranteed it's going to be Rams and Patriots. But I would love it to be the Rams to be the Chiefs.
You know, I want to ask you quickly about the Patriots, too, because, you know, I never seen a game where Tom Brady and Bill Belichick conspired to lose the game for them and basically lost – to me – the Patriots right now are a team that's the focus is not what it's always been. There's something. Look, I think they're going to the Super Bowl. I still think that because I don't buy the Chiefs. I know Mahomes is there, but they still got to win a big. You know, Andy Reid's never won a playoff game there with them. I mean, you got to give me a playoff win. You know what I mean? And even in Kansas City, who hasn't been able to do it, but there's something off with the Pats. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, there definitely is. And what's interesting about the Pats is that. One of the byproducts of succeeding so much is that when you have just these all-time gaffes, you can just kind of absorb them in stride, I guess, because that seems to be what happened from last week. I remember a couple of years ago when Belichick was crushed in Indianapolis because he went for it on fourth down.
And
these are things that some coaches basically wind up getting fired over, and these are things that Bill Polizzi can laugh about over a beer. But I do think they're missing a step. I do. But I'll believe they're not going to be in the Super Bowl and they're not in the Super Bowl.
Right, right.
But here's a question I wanted to ask you, Joe, and all, if I could, let me finish with this. So, now, I worked in Kansas City, and I knew Marty Schottenheimer back in the day. Would you have rather, for the last 25 years, would you rather have been more a Chiefs fan where you had both Schottenheimer and Reid, who are basically the same coach, win 100 games a year in the regular season, and every year – as they're suffering and bleeding through this awful playoff loss, you know they're going to lose the game in the playoffs. Would you rather have that, or would you rather have what you've had with the Jets the last 3?
Boy, that's a tough call. That's a tough call. You know, I got to tell you, I give me the playoffs all the time, will you? Can I get that?
I'm with you. I agree.
Marty Schottenheimer, I know he never won the big one, but boy, the guy. He was winning big games in Cleveland. He won big games in Kansas City. He won big games in San Diego. We could go on and on. I mean, he went 14-2 with the Chargers, and they fired him after they lost to the Patriots.
When they were playing that game against the Patriots, I was talking to a friend of mine I worked with in Kansas City. We covered Martyr together, and I said, you know what? There's one guy who could lose this game, and he's coaching this game.
Yeah.
But you know what? You get that shot every year after year. I'm with you. That's what I would pick if I were a fan. I'd pick annual heartbreak over annual indifference.
And I take Andy Reid as my coach in a nanosecond.
Yeah, I would too.
There's a lot of similarities between Andy Reid and Mike McCarthy.
Except McCarthy's won a championship where Andy has not. You know?
It's true.
McCarthy should be the coach, Mike. I mean, look, if Mike Tomlin's available, if John Harbaugh's available, sure, I'd want those guys. There's no doubt about that. Even I would take Jim Harbaugh, too. I'll take my chances, you know? He'll develop my quarterback, if nothing else. I really believe that with Jim Harbaugh. But those are the guys. That's it. To go with another, to try another, to think we're going to get the next Matt Nagy or Sean McVay, think again. You know what I mean?
You know what every coach should have as they walk away, being told that they had an underachieving career? The ability to look to point to the Super Bowl trophy and say, that one belongs to me.
Yeah, well.
You know, McCarthy is. I think McCarthy will rise again in this league somewhere. And you know, if we're all lucky around here, maybe it's around here. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I hope I'm alive, Mike. I hope I'm alive.
Me too, Joe.
Thank you, Mike.
Mike, it's always all a pleasure. Right, keep up the great work. All right, man.
Great talking to you. Thanks, guys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.